Welcome to Common Sense Care, parenting gender-confused children with truth and love. The gender industry's so-called affirmative care model is their one-size-fits-all answer for everybody who struggles with their identity and their sense of who they are. But in no other area of medicine, education, or psychology is a one-size-fits-all treatment plan the best thing for every person. We believe that each child is an individual and should be given the care that's most appropriate for him or her. So welcome back. I'm Maria Keffler.
And I'm Erin Brewer. And the reason I was kind of distracted during your introduction is that I was looking at this U.S. Transgender Survey 2015, which is what we're going to talk about today. And it always just astonishes me how much of our policies, school policies, government policies, ideology, the kinds of responses people get, the hatred that is fueled is based on this survey. And very few people really understand it. So we're going to spend some time talking about it today.
Yeah, well, we did that role play a few weeks ago where I've gotten so much feedback on that. I don't know if you have too, but how you just really captured the 15-year-old coming out as with a trans identity. And then I played your mom and we kind of role played how that went. And one of the things that happened in that conversation was 15-year-old Erin told her mom, I've got all this research and all these studies, and you're totally going to buy into this as soon as you see these. So we wanted to do a follow-up to that where we look at some of the research that's supposedly undergirding trans ideology. And you're right, this is a big one. I've looked at it too. And you even, I think, blogged about this, kind of taken apart some of the problems that it has with it. So I just wanted to say, we talked about doing another role play between parent and child with this to follow up on our last role play. But we just felt like that wasn't going to be quite as effective as just, let's just talk about this
study. Yeah, let's actually really analyze it, because there are so many flaws. And again, this is a survey, so it doesn't even purport to be a study. And yet it is often used as if it is a valid and methodologically sound research study. It's not. It is a survey, which is basically a group of questions that's sent out to participants. In this case, the participants are self-selected, which means they chose to participate, and it's self-reported, which means the entire, all of the responses are based on somebody's impressions of their life retrospectively, so their past. And so these are all things that really make it not very strong as evidence to support anything, especially because when I read through the methodology, the way in which they recruited participants was to send a link to pro-trans organizations. And so already we've got bias there. This is not a group of people who suffered from gender dysphoria. This is a group of people who wanted to transition, who did transition, and are reporting about their experience with transitioning.
Another thing that struck me about it was that all of the participants were adults. Mm-hmm. You had to be 18 or older to participate in the survey. And yet I see this reported all the time for policies around children. Mm-hmm. So why are we using this report, which only studied adults, and as you said, self-selected adults who are already pro all these policies going into it, but then applying it to populations of children? That doesn't work.
It doesn't work. And also, if you read through the study, the way the questions are phrased and the conclusions from the questions are really concerning. So one of the questions that they ask about is whether or not somebody's experienced discrimination in getting medical care, which sounds like a reasonable question. But then the way they determine if somebody's been discriminated against getting medical care is if they haven't been able to access the types of transgender interventions that they want. And so they're suggesting that that's medical care. And so they have a very high rate of people who are saying they've been denied medical care. Well, in fact, they've been denied access to the interventions that they have decided that they want, which is very different from actual, you know, being denied medical care. But it's very concerning if you hear that, you know, 98% of transgender people have been discriminated against getting medical care. That sounds really concerning. But then when you dive down and realize, well, actually what it's saying is that doctors are not giving every transgender person exactly what they want. Well, it's really different.
And we heard from our friend Alex in one of our PEC Talks videos about a doctor who created his own treatment plan that he wanted to have a pouch made that he could hide his penis in and then have a neo-vagina, basically a hole drilled into him, so that he could be both male and female at the same time. And this was apparently 10 years ago, but he wrote up this surgical plan and took it around and tried to get somebody to do it for him. And he was told no. Mm-hmm. So in this case, he would be, according to the survey, among the people who were denied medical care,
right,
on a discriminatory basis.
The other thing that I see time and time again is activists who kind of want to play it both ways. They get extremely upset if they're misgendered during a doctor visit, but then they also get very upset if they're not offered services that are kind of absurd to be offered. So we will have somebody who's claiming to be a female, a male who's identifying as a female, get extremely upset if they ask him if he wants a pap smear because he doesn't have a cervix. But the same person will also get very upset if they're not asked if they want a pap smear because they're a real woman. And so again, it's almost like, you know, no matter what the healthcare providers do, somebody in this community is going to claim that they've been discriminated against. And so there's, you know, and again, for medical records, it's really important for doctors to know the biological sex of a patient because the treatment changes based on biology. And so again, they want the best medical care, and yet they also want to be accepted as the opposite sex. And so there's really no way to provide good medical care in this situation. It's not discriminatory. It's just that the healthcare providers are in a very difficult situation in trying to navigate these patients.
Yeah, I think about, I think my son would be okay with me talking about this. He needed to go on Accutane for acne. He had acne really bad and nothing else that we did was fixing it. And so they did Accutane, which is a really, really harsh chemical to put in kids' systems. And since he's a boy, it wasn't a big deal. Like, he can't get pregnant, right? So he didn't need to be on birth control. But if my daughter needed that, we would have to put her on birth control for the entire 6 months that she's on it because it causes birth defects. It is really important that the dermatologist knows, is this a biological female or a biological male if they're prescribing Accutane? And I can see very much that that would be problematic for a girl who presents as a boy if she passes and she goes in there and says, yeah, I'm a male. Yeah, but she would complain she's being discriminated against if, you know, they wanted to know if she was male or female biologically.
Yeah. And so really the healthcare providers are in an untenable situation. And again, this allows trans activists to say we're discriminated against all the time, but it's based on, you know, sort of these absurd expectations that cannot be met and that reasonably should not be met for them. The other thing that I hear over and over again is about suicide. This study is quoted over and over again as evidence that we need to allow children and adults to access these interventions because of the suicide rate, the suicide, the thoughts about suicide, the attempts of suicide. One of the things that trans activists will say is that the rate of suicide goes way up when somebody transitions. Well, many of us look at that and say, well, that's probably evidence that people shouldn't be medically transitioning because their suicidality goes up. What the activists say is, no. The reason the suicidality goes up is because of the discrimination that they experience. So again, this study actually supports those of us who are saying these medical interventions are dangerous and increase the harm to these people, but they're spinning it in a way to support their contention, which is you know, the whole reason that the suicidality is so high is because of how poorly these people are treated. And so again, we have good evidence to suggest that that these medical interventions are dangerous and harmful, but the activists instead spin it in a way to support medically transitioning children and adults, when we know that the completed suicide rate goes way up once somebody has gone through these interventions. And so it's really frustrating when the actual evidence that they're supporting, that they're using to support their ideology, actually doesn't even support their ideology. It has to be really contorted in order to bolster their claims. And yet the media will time and time again look at, you know, quote this study as evidence that we have to support the transgender ideology.
Well, this is a different situation and a different study, but I've seen that same phenomenon in other places where they'll use a study that doesn't actually support their argument to say it supports their argument. And this was GLSEN, the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network. They are notoriously light on citations for all of their policies, but they had a piece that came out, and I can't remember exactly what the article was, but I dug through their citations and one of them looked really good. It was the CDC's SHIPS report, School Health Policy and Program Survey, I think. But that's a really significant, well done survey report by the CDC. And so they cited it in here for support of their program. And I went through, I got the report. It was like 56 pages long, and I read every single word of it. There was nothing in there that related to what they were talking about. Not a word. And I was like, let me really try to find what they're using for support here. They just put that in there because it's a respected report. Wow. And so people look at that and go, oh, wow, they've cited the CDC. They must know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. They know what they're doing. They're misrepresenting things.
Well, and it's very frustrating because most people don't have a good background in research. And so they're unable to deconstruct these surveys and studies that are purporting to support the transgender ideology. And so, you know, there have even been cases where I've seen studies come out that completely support our contention that this is dangerous and harmful. And again, the media spins it. And so, and a lot of that is because, first of all, people don't have time to go to the original source and research it. This document is 302 pages, Maria. Most people are not going to spend time going through this and really evaluating it. And we rely on the media to give us good information, and they're not in this case. And that's really dangerous. The other area where this report is used a lot is to suggest that children have to medically transition, and that any kind of therapy that would be used to help them understand the reason that they're having these difficult feelings, to really resolve the underlying issues that we know contribute to the gender dysphoria, is considered to be dangerous. And that's again because of these self-reports about how discriminated against these people have been, and how harmful it is when somebody doesn't validate them. And again, this is a self-report. This is one of the reports that's used to suggest that transgender people, trans-identified people, are victims of violence because of their definition of violence. You know, when misgendering and deadnaming is considered violence, well, then they're able to claim that these poor trans-identified people are victims of violence at an incredible rate. What's most frustrating about this is that they completely fail to look at people like me and Walt Heyer and Billy Burley and L. Palmer and Sidney Wright, and I could name dozens more, who had gender dysphoria and either had help resolving those feelings or transitioned and realized it was completely the wrong treatment for what was wrong, and detransitioned, and now are physically damaged as a result of the interventions that they got. And so it makes me very angry that a survey like this is being touted as evidence that we have to, you know, wholeheartedly support the trans agenda. Otherwise, these poor trans people are going to kill themselves. It's just basically the narrative. And I wondered if you could just address that contention that because these trans-identified people report higher suicide ideation, that we should just go ahead and give them what they want and are asking for.
Well, that's emotional manipulation. It's emotional blackmail. We've talked about this before. I had a boyfriend in college who did this to me. He didn't want me to break up with him. And he'd call me night after night after night and threaten suicide. And I recognize now that's abuse. That's actually psychological and emotional abuse. And that's what's happening here. And one of the things that I noted in this study, one of the questions that they asked about suicide was, have you ever seriously thought about hurting yourself? Mm-hmm. I think a lot of us have seriously thought about hurting ourselves at one time or another. I think we've all had times in our lives where we've asked, should I just off myself? Is that the best course here? So I think that's a very leading question and a very deceptive question to be asking.
It also fails to address the fact that I think I've seen like 98 to 100% of people who have a trans identity have significant comorbid conditions, such mm-hmm. as autism, depression, anxiety, borderline personality disorder, dissociative disorder. These are people who have significant mental health issues that mm-hmm. are being overlooked and not treated effectively. So mm-hmm. it's not surprising to me that they would have an even higher rate of suicide ideation yeah. because they're in these categories that are vulnerable to that.
I had a conversation with a friend who's a social worker, and she's very pro LGB and TQ, the whole thing. And she talked about the high rate of suicide. And she said the same thing. She gave the party line that, well, it's because they're so downtrodden, they're treated so badly. And I said, isn't it possible that they're suicidal because they're not living a psychologically and physically healthy life? Yeah. That the choices that they're making about their health care and about the way they're going to live is not leading to healthy outcomes. Yeah. And she really didn't have an answer for that. I mean, she said, yeah, I guess that could be. Well, if that could be, then we need to look at that. Yeah. And we've talked before about correlation is not the same as causation. You can't look at two things that occur together and say that one causes the other, because it could be something outside of it, a third factor affecting it. One, we don't know. We can't say this is what's causing it.
Right.
And I see that a lot with studies like these that are coming out of the pro-trans community, is they make a lot of causation claims that really aren't supported.
Yeah, and again, it goes back to the methodology that in order for, and it's frustrating because a lot of these trans advocates will suggest that that there are lots of people in the world who are not scientific and who have all these ideas based on, non-scientific ideologies. And I'm like, wait a minute, if you're really pushing science, then they understand what good science is. And that means that you have a control group, which these don't have. They don't have a control group.
Because this is a survey. It's not an experiment.
Right, not an experiment. This is, again, self-selected. That means that, they're sending this specifically to pro-trans organizations and asking people to fill it out. I don't know if you've ever filled out a survey, Maria, but I know that I have. And there are times when, I know that the survey is designed to elicit a specific response.
It's biased from the outset.
And the way that they developed the survey was they had pro-transgender organizations develop it. So it wasn't even reviewed to make for validity. It reminds me a lot of when I think I was in eighth grade. And at the time I was a very hardcore leftist, and my teachers all thought it would be very funny to put me on Senator Orrin Hatch's Youth Advisory Committee. For those who don't know who Orrin Hatch, he was in the Senate for Utah and a hardcore Republican for decades.
Very conservative.
Yeah. And his office would send out these surveys to the Youth Advisory Committee. And they would say things like, should we increase spending for defense 10%, 20%, 30%, or 40%? And then they would publish the results. 100% of the Youth Advisory Committee thinks that we should increase spending for defense. And so I would not fill out the survey. I would write in my own answers and I never got a response, but they clearly were eliciting, you know, the survey was designed to elicit a specific response.
There was no option to say, no, we shouldn't increase defense spending or we should decrease it.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And that's how this survey, you know, really reminds me of that. And also, again, the way they define discrimination, discrimination basically is defined by the person. Have you ever been discriminated against? Well, sure. I'm sure, you know, one of the parts of this ideology is that the transgender identified people are one of the most discriminated bodies, you know, communities, populations. Mm-hmm. So of course they're going to say, oh yeah, of course I've been discriminated against. Yeah. And the other thing is that when you're feeling like you're part of a marginalized population, anytime something bad happens to you, you can attribute it to your identity rather than to mm-hmm. the fact that just stuff happens. And so there's also no validation. So somebody could say, you know, I attempted suicide 10 times. There's no attempt to go back and look at health records to determine whether that's accurate. Yeah. Even the committing of suicide, I've heard numerous times that people in the trans community encourage people who want to get these interventions to kind of stage a suicide attempt. So they'll take maybe 2 Tylenols and say that they were attempting suicide. And then that's recorded as a suicide attempt. And then they are more able to advocate to get the interventions they need because mm-hmm. they're suicidal. Again, this is just, it's so disingenuous. But you know, this is what we have to push back against. If, you know, we need to insist on quality research if people are gonna make claims.
Well, and another thing that I just learned at a conference that you and I were both at, one of the presenters was talking about the phrase, a growing body of research. Yeah. And we hear this all the time. There's a growing body of research that says, you know, whatever the trans advocates want it to say. But the way that happens is you get a study or a survey like this one, and then somebody writes an article and cites it. Mm-hmm. Right. And then another person writes an article and cites both of them, mm-hmm. the 2015 survey plus this other article. And then a fourth person writes an article and cites all three of those. And I think they called it research stacking, data stacking.
And if you look at the WPATH guidelines, that's exactly what they've done. You know, there's the same studies reinvented, or they'll even sometimes, you know, there might be a media outlet that kind of reviews this study. And then that will be added to the growing body of research. And so again, it's like they have created a myth in order to support their claims. And it's really important that we push back against it. And for people who don't have a strong research background, I guess I would just encourage you maybe to go to Google and just, you know, look at research methodology. There are some really simple tutorials mm-hmm. on, you know, what makes good research and what are common methodological flaws. And I suspect that if you go through those, you'll find pretty much every one of them in the surveys and the research that people are using to claim that these kids are better off if they're medically transitioned. The other thing that I think is really important that you pointed out, this is based on adults, and mm-hmm. again, we're doing all these things to children and we have no evidence, absolutely zero evidence of the benefit of it. And even Robert Garofalo, who works for Lurie's Children's Hospital in Chicago, admits that. He's the director of their gender clinic. And he even admits that we don't really have evidence. We do, however, have good evidence that shows that therapy and support helps the vast majority of these kids outgrow these feelings. And so again, they're really manipulating us into accepting this when the only treatment option that we know of that works is being actually made illegal in many states through mm-hmm. therapy bans. And so again, this is an attempt to just help viewers to understand this is an ideology. It's not based in science and it's harmful.
And people might be asking, why? Why would someone go to all this trouble? I mean, we really do sound a bit like conspiracy theorists that, oh, they've constructed this whole house of cards. It's a manufactured thing. Why? follow the money. Yeah. When you want to know what happened, follow the money. Yes. I've been in situations where somebody in an organization was behaving badly. As soon as you start following the money, the people who are at fault usually start crying foul.
Yeah.
This is a billion-dollar industry. I have seen three market reports just about sex reassignment surgery, not even about the hormones, just sex reassignment surgery. They expect to be almost a billion-dollar industry alone in the next 5 years. So that's why.
And I would encourage people to go look at Jennifer Balick's 11th Hour blog, because she's done a phenomenal job of tracing the money and showing, you know, people that we have, I believe it's Pritzker, who has an organization that gives grants to clinics like Lori's Children's Hospital. And then they go into schools and recruit. And it's because they are benefiting from the, because they're pharmaceutical companies. And again, it seems, you know, we could be viewed as conspiracy theorists, but I also think that, you know, there's evidence out there to support what we're saying. We're not just making this up. And if people don't stand up and fight it back against it, we're going to be like the people in Nazi Germany who said, oh, you know, the Nazis aren't really trying to kill all the Jews. You're just making that up. You're just fear mongering. That's, you know, very few people stood up against what the Nazis were doing, because initially they didn't believe that something so horrible could actually be taking place. And so we need to understand something so horrible is taking place. Mm-hmm. And we need to be the ones that stand up and fight for our children.
Absolutely agree. Absolutely agree. Thanks, Erin. Thanks for all the study that you've done into that survey and really looking at it. Okay.
Well, thanks, Maria. And these are very difficult. You know, it's very difficult to sort of sift through all the obfuscation that's going on, but it's really important. Do you want to tell people about Partners for Ethical Care?
Yeah, please come to our website, partnersforethicalcare.com. You can also email us at support@partnersforethicalcare.com. We are working to end the medicalization of children in the name of transgender medicine. And so we have a lot of resources on our website. If you are dealing with this in your family and you need some help, some guidance, some support, come visit us, partnersforethicalcare.com.
Well, thank you, Maria. We'll see you next week.
See you next time.
We are not doctors or therapists. We are not giving medical or psychiatric advice, and we offer no guarantee of outcomes. We simply want to talk about how to support and love kids using long understood best practices from the fields of psychology, education, and child development. We're glad you joined in our conversation today, and we hope that you took away something you can put in your toolkit for parenting your gender-confused kids with truth.